Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
You know, one of the dominant storylines of the spring for Georgia was Kirby Smart being unhappy with his defense. You may remember that. I'm sure you were following that closely at DogNation.com throughout the entire process. Now, once we finally got to G-Day, that defense actually looked pretty good. But during the spring, Kirby Smart, when he spoke about the defense, spent a lot of that time challenging this group to do a little better. One of the things he even mentioned during the spring was maybe not being really all that sure exactly what kind of defense he even had. What's the personality of this group? Kirby Smart back during the spring said he wasn't even sure yet.
I've been around some really unique ones where there was great defenses coming back at Alabama, and maybe they underperformed for the spring, but they stepped up when they had to. Then there's other ones that have been really hungry, and then they didn't perform great in early in the season because maybe they had butterflies and nerves. I don't know. This defense has not taken on its true identity yet.
I think there was a reason why Kirby Smart said what he said there and things like that this spring is that the personality that he wanted his defense to take on, the identity that he wanted his defense to possess, was one of a dominant group, a group with a little bit of swagger, a group that really led the way for the Georgia program and really lived up to the hype that all the individual players on that group kind of collectively bring to the table here. As a matter of fact, when Kirby Smart spoke specifically about the challenge that he gave to his defense during the spring, that challenge was to be more dominant. Here's Kirby again.
What I see is some guys that are kind of complacent and guys that are comfortable in their role, meaning I've started here for 2 years. I'm comfortable in my role. I am a leader on this team. I'm comfortable in my role, not challenging themselves to get better. You know, we go out and do a two-minute, and the offense scores twice, and they score, whether it's a field goal or a touchdown, to win, and they score against a defense that every single guy that was on that field when they scored was playing last year, with the exception of the star, the nickel. So I'm disappointed in that, and I don't think that there's enough sense of urgency for that defense, because as much as you guys want to say they're all talented and they're all this and that, until they actually prove it and they go out on the field and they dominate like a defense that should have nine returning starters dominates, I'm not going to be happy with their performance, because I think that they should do that, and we haven't done that in four practices so far.
I think dominate's a really interesting word there, because I think it's probably an apt description of what Georgia's defense can do in 2017, which is probably worth pointing out makes this defensive unit different than some of the ones that Georgia has had in recent years. You know, if you look at Kirby Smart's first season in 2016, this was a pretty good defense, but in 2017 has had a chance to be much better. Go back to the 2 years that Jeremy Pruitt was on campus at Georgia, 2014 and 2015, once again, a pretty good defense, but I don't think that those defenses, both on paper at the start of the season or at the end of the season when you look back on results, really have the same potential that this Georgia unit has in 2017. And that's something that Seth Emerson agrees with, because he said something very close to that on a recent episode of Dog Nation Daily.
When you have looked at the talent out there and combination of talent and experience, I'm not sure great should have been the expectation for any of those years. Good was a fair expectation, and that's what they've been. But when you combine the pure talent and the experience coming back this year, I think the expectation should be to be great.
Now, of course, and I'm going to make an obvious point here, so I apologize for being overly simplistic, but to have a great defense, you have to have a great element. To be great, you have to be great at something specific. Now, that's maybe self-evident, but it's also worth pointing out here that if the Georgia defense is going to be great in 2017, there's got to be a group on this defense that really leads the way in that regard, that puts itself at the very top of the country, or among the very top in the country. So if you're a Georgia fan looking at the defense on the field in 2017, I think it's a fair question to ask. Which unit of this Georgia defense is going to be great and leading the way for a group that has a chance, to use Kirby Smart's word, to dominate, or have a chance to use Seth Emerson's word, be great on the field this season? And the answer, according to many of the national magazines, may be that Georgia linebacking core. Because a couple of those preseason magazines you can find on newsstands right now agree that Georgia's linebackers number one in America. That's what Lindy's preseason magazine has said, and that's what Athlon Sports preseason magazine has said as well. For an example of what the national opinion is of the Georgia linebackers for a moment, let me read what Lindy's wrote. That the Dogs were 16th in the country last year in yards allowed, and the next step is unleashing the greatness of the full pass rushing potential. of senior outside linebackers Lorenzo Carter and Davin Bellamy. They combined for 10 sacks and 15 tackles for loss last season and frankly can do better. Roquan Smith could push for All-American honors from an inside position. Joined by Natress Patrick and Reggie Carter in the rotation, like the entire Bulldogs team, it looks good on paper. Now let's see it. Now that last sentence is something that a lot of fans will agree with, that Georgia's been kind of the darling of preseason magazines before. How about some of those talented players actually putting that together on the field here this season? That would be something that a lot of Georgia fans would like to see. I also think it's interesting that Roquan Smith, his name, is used in the same sentence with the idea of being a potential All-American. I don't think that's an overstatement. I think that's a possibility. But the two names that get mentioned there in the top of that sort of capsulized description, Davin Bellamy, Lorenzo Carter, their return is key for Georgia this season and one of the reasons why the Bulldogs linebackers rank so high on so many of these preseason national lists. And, of course, Kirby Smart knows how important the return of Carter and Bellamy are, not just for Georgia's linebackers, but the team in general.
I think anytime you get the leadership of those two guys, you know, Lorenzo affects the game so much. He's so active. I mean, the TCU game, it's crazy how many plays he made, just causing fumbles, stripping the balls down, running things down. He's working really hard. Because that was one of the big things with Lorenzo, studying on coming back or not. He knew it was a target area for him to add some weight. So he's been able to do that. Now let's see if he can go play with it. Let's see if he can sustain and be active with that. And same thing with Bellamy, being active in pass rush. But, you know, more and more teams, you're having to get more athletic on defense to defend them. And having those two back certainly helps.
And, of course, to truly be the best linebackers in America, you've got to have more than just a couple stars. You've got to have some depth, too. I thought it was interesting that an Athlon Sports capsule of describing why Georgia's linebackers the best, it mentioned some of the depth Georgia has, including a guy like Chauncey Manack, who didn't play last year but could be a big-time contributor, at least in a reserve role this year for Georgia, which kind of leads me to the bottom line point of this whole discussion. You know, the closer we get to the start of the 2017 season, the more that you start to feel like the identity for Georgia this season is to be a team led by its defense, and a defense that has a chance to be not just good, but maybe even a step or two better than that, almost reminding people of some of those junkyard dog days of the early 80s. It could be that kind of defense and that kind of identity for Georgia this season. And if that's true, if the linebackers really are as good as the national magazine suggests they can be, I think that identity will be just fine for most Georgia fans. My name's Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us on Facebook Live, 10 a.m. each and every day on the Dog Nation Facebook page, on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, for those of you who are there in the Athens area, in podcast form on iTunes and SoundCloud and posted at dognation.com, however you find us. Thank you so much for being with us. We're looking forward and excited about the start and heading towards the September with our Dog Nation Invasion to South Bend. Excited about the big win there this September. And, of course, one of the sponsors that makes it all possible is Larceny Bourbon, a 92-proof weeded small-batch bourbon made from 200 barrels or less that are hand-selected by their master distillers from the finest barrels in the Rickhouse. Unlock the smoothness today at LarcenyBourbon.com. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. I'll also remind you now, just 147 days away from the world's largest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville this October, we believe that on Dog Nation Daily, a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. That's why we do our Gator hater countdown here on Dog Nation Daily. And we want you to count down with us. The best way to do that is check out shopdognation.com. Get your very own Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirts with the Dog Nation Daily logo on the sleeve, the Gator Hater license plate on the front. And it'll be a great way to show these lousy, stinking Gators that we're coming for them this October. Check it out at shopdognation.com. We've got free shipping for you on those t-shirts there. Fun conversation with Jeff Sintel coming up. He's in Athens with the Kirby Smart Camp going on this weekend. We'll also look back at the Javon Becton commitment to UGA. We'll get all that from Jeff Sintel here today on Dog Nation Daily. Let's get ready to enjoy Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Great to have Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily. And Jeff, I don't mind telling you that on Wednesday night I was doing like a lot of other Georgia fans were doing, on the internet, scrambling around, trying to find out as much as I could about Javon Becton. And well, now he's a member of Georgia's 2018 class, and people have had a chance to kind of get to know this young man a little bit and kind of get to know what he brings to the table. So let me just, as a way of starting our conversation today, say, can you tell us a little bit about what Becton, the defensive end from Virginia, brings to the table as a player?
Sure. Hey, Brandon, how are you doing,
man? I'm doing well.
I'm actually joining you on a Friday from maybe steps away from the Woodruff practice fields. Kirby Smart camp day two is underway. We had 30 minutes of figuring out who the all-stretch team is going to be and who put on their helmet on the most and who showed great flexibility. Then after our 30 minutes, we were ushered away for the real camp work to begin. But if you want to know about Jay Vaughn, I tell you what, I did a lot of research on the young man over the past, I don't know, 36 hours now. And, you know, I always try to go beyond, like, you know, the three-star ranking, the number 48 weak side defensive end. The young man's about 6'5", 250. He spent his first 2 years of high school playing basketball, and someone told him, hey, kid, you're pretty big, pretty long, pretty lean. Why don't you try football? So here are the things you should really zero in on with, you know, Javon. The first thing is he is just 16 years old. When he goes to the University of Georgia, he will just be 17 years old. Second thing to think about is he has played exactly one year of varsity football. That's why I feel he's going to be a redshirt candidate to redshirt his first year at Georgia. That's just a really raw prospect and a pretty good reason why a 6'5", 250-pound kid whose first rep on his highlight tape as an outside linebacker defensive end has him playing receiver. This guy catches receiver, works receiver on 7-on-7s for his high school, catches fade routes, but he's a defensive end. Those are just some of the things where he's got a lot of length and size and agility, maybe needs to work on the natural aggression and hostility. That's kind of why I think you should probably look for him to be in Athens in 2018, but maybe not be a huge factor until 2020. By that time, he could put his hand on the ground. He might be 6'6", 275, might be a defensive end. His body might change. If his body stays the same, the Georgia coaches have told him that he would likely be an outside linebacker.
You mentioned being in Athens. I look forward to talking to you in just a moment about what's going to happen with that camp there this weekend, kind of some of the things that you're seeing. Before that, though, I want to go a little deeper on the Becton stuff here for a moment because, you know, I watch your Facebook Lives on Wednesday night brought to you by Kroger, and I see the people that are commenting to you, and I think you would agree with me, Jeff, that your readers, the people who are watching your Facebook Lives, that's a pretty plugged-in bunch, and they're following all aspects of UGA recruiting. And one of the things that I see people say to you a lot in those kind of forums is, hey, what's Shane Beamer doing as a recruiter? Is he having an impact on this Georgia staff? Is he kind of carrying his weight here as a recruiting assistant coach? And in the case of Javon Becton, this is Beamer doing what he was brought to Georgia to do, right? Going into a talent-rich area of Virginia and bringing out a prospect. Even if it's not a guy that a lot of Georgia fans know a lot about, this is Beamer utilizing a geographic region that he knows a lot about, right?
Yeah, definitely. You think about the Tidewater area, the 757 area. Georgia fans will remember a lot of names. Like Taraja Mitchell is coming out of that area right now, the outside linebacker, the inside linebacker that's going to choose between Florida State and Ohio State. Georgia was in there for a cup of coffee in his decision, but they didn't make his eventual whittled-down list. You know, that's that area that Ronald Curry came from, Allen Iverson came from, you know, D'Angelo Hall came from. I can go on and on and on. Marcus Vick, Michael Vick. That's basically one of the best areas on the Atlantic coast for prospects. That's the Virginia Beach region. And Becton comes out of that. And, you know, Shane Beamer, he's got a brand name in the state of Virginia, point blank, period. The same way an assistant coach named Dooley would have a lot of, or Russell would have a lot of, would open a lot of doors in the state of Georgia. And Shane, you know, he knew his high school coach. He knows a lot of coaches in that area from his time growing up in Virginia and then being on the staff at Virginia Tech and the influence he's had growing up in his college career. And you remember Shane also went to Virginia Tech, so made a lot of contacts. And this is the type of thing, you know, Georgia's staff, as it was built, was supposed to be a group of stealthy ninja recruiters. And those guys were supposed to open up different pockets of the country. You look at the James Coley hire, that's a South Florida hire. You look at the Shane Beamer hire, that is most definitely a 757, a Virginia, Washington, D.C., that type of East Coast territory that he's supposed to have inroads in. And you've got your first really big win right now with Coach Beamer with the latest commitment to Georgia.
The other thing that you kind of wrote about, and I remember back, you know, on our show going back, you know, around the time of G-Day, you really stressed this point that, you know, Georgia fans who want to see 2018 wins should realize that the atmosphere they create for G-Day has a way of really setting the stage for more of those wins in the recruiting cycle. And it would seem that Becton is another example of that, a guy that, you know, came to Georgia, saw the atmosphere for G-Day, and really that was a big selling point for him, right?
Yeah, it was. It's funny. He said basically he couldn't even think of his second place school. This is how this story worked out, Brandon. It's so funny how recruiting works sometimes. So they're at a 7-on-7, and this was basically the night he committed, the day he committed. They're at a 7-on-7, and the coach casually says, hey, summertime, man, you got to figure out your schools. You should probably start whittling those down. He's like, can you get to a top five? And he took about a minute. He named the top five, and the coach, his head coach, was like, I bet I can guess your top three. And he was like, the head coach rolled off his top three. And then they continued talking, and it was basically like Javon told him, he's like, you know what, coach, I really already know. I've known for about a couple weeks and a couple months now. Huh. And from there, it progressed to call mom, talk to the coaches on his high school staff, talk to the coaches at Georgia. And, I mean, maybe in the cycle of about 3 or 4 hours, he went from need to make a top five, I probably have a top three, or it's really been a top one for a long time, and he committed to Georgia. That's how fast that worked. And, you know, you always sit there and think how different kids operate a lot differently than others. And, you know, some of these guys have to go to top 15s, top 12s, top 20s, top 8s, top 7s, then to top 5, then to top 3 and top 1. And here was a young man who basically refined his process pretty quickly.
To go back to Shane Beamer here for a moment, how realistic do you think it is that Georgia could pull multiple players from this 757 area code? What comes to mind for me is, when the old coaching staff, you know, goes down to American Heritage High School and gets Sony Michel and Isaiah McKenzie, and I think there was a thought of, hey, maybe that's a pipeline to Fort Lauderdale opened up for UGA, but then the coaching staff changes. You never really see how that would have exactly worked its way out. I mean, is it possible for an out-of-state school like Georgia to truly set up camp in a place that's so far away, geographically speaking?
Yeah, I think it is. I think the only thing that happens there is that, you know, a guy like Javon has to come in, start at Georgia, maybe make an All-American team, maybe make an All-SEC team, progress to the draft. You just got to start opening up those inroads. You know, everybody, and still then, Brandon, it's not an inexact science going forward. You think about the inroads that Georgia built with American Heritage down in Plantation, and they got a Marshall Morgan, and then that led to a Sony Michel, and that led to a Isaiah McKenzie, but then you see big-time players like they have now.
Yeah.
You see big-time player like Brian Burns last year.
Yeah.
You just need to have a foothold. You just need to have some sort of reputation on that campus. And I'll tell you what happens. Like today, for instance, you know, Rashad Wilgoose Jr. is here from Miami's Northwestern High. He's up on a visit. He recently decommitted from Rutgers. A lot of think that guy's now a priority cornerback take for Georgia. Well, I see Wild Goose, and I see DeAndre Baker, who went to his high school many years ago, like 4 or 5 years ago, and he quickly found the kid and put the arm around his neck and everything else like that. That's a situation where a current player from a far-off away pocket can sit there and build the bridge and make a young man feel real comfortable and say, hey, man, I was a little curious about this place too, but it has been the best thing for me, and you'll love it here as well. That's how that pipeline recruiting is supposed to work.
So I want to give you my million-dollar idea, Jeff. I've said this for a while now, that I want to make a television network that's nothing but a network that shows clips of college football prospect dunking basketballs. I can never get enough of these big football players throwing down a basketball. I just think it looks fantastic. And the latest got to do that, you had this one of your Centel Intel pieces this week, is Trey Hill, who's obviously the big offensive lineman there from Houston County, former teammate of Jake Fromm. And, boy, there's a lot to like about this prospect anyway, but when you see the athleticism, the agility to get up and dunk a basketball, makes you realize that Hill really brings a lot to the table, does he not?
Yeah, he does, and I think he's really knocking on the door of like a five-star prospect in my mind. You know, 6'4" and a half, maybe 335, depending on whether he had the
the egg white grill for breakfast or went for the full-blown sausage and egg McMuffin with hash browns and gravy on top. I think that's kind of where he's at right now. And you see that athleticism, and the guy just mauls people. You know, he's really a guy that I think Georgia has to have in the class of 2018. And I tell you what, if Georgia – I know everybody that's leaned in and viewing and checking this out right now, I think Georgia's recruiting on the offensive line is great, but I don't even know if the guy that came up with the iPod, the iPhone, all that stuff is going to be able to sell offensive guards to come to Georgia in 2019 and 2020 if Georgia is able to land Jamari Sawyer and even Trey Hill to go on top of Justin Schaefer, Solomon Kinley, and Natori Johnson. That's going to take a heck of a pitch right there. I don't care who's playing center to get future guards to come to Georgia, at least immediately, when Georgia clicks off an Army All-American in 2017 and then the nation's number one and number two guards in 2018. That's going to be a tough depth chart to crack.
And listen, that's exciting news, obviously, but the problem from that with my perspective is that, you know, I saw the quotes that Trey Hill gave you. I think he's calling, what, Clemson his best visit to date. You know, he's certainly not publicly saying that Georgia's his leader right now. Now, there's obviously a strong tie between, you know, the Warner Robins area and Georgia, certainly with his teammate Jake Fromm on campus at UGA. But, boy, you know, publicly, Hill is really playing those cards close to his vest, certainly not putting Georgia out in front of schools like Clemson, Auburn, and others right now, which I think for many Georgia fans, to be honest here, is a little bit of a concern.
I think there's a lot of expert poker players, Brandon, in the class of 2018, and they're definitely a little bit too James Bond secret level spy agent stuff for your blood. I know that.
Very much
so. You really want guys to be sitting there waving the flag, and, you know, basically they would have the Georgia fight song as like walk-up music when they go work out at a camp or something like that.
That'd be my preference.
You feel a lot better about that. But, you know, I think the best way to say that is, you know, Trey Hill really likes Auburn, really likes Florida State, really likes Clemson. But I think he really, really likes Georgia, even if he's not even putting all that on yet or putting that out there yet. That is strictly my opinion. I just think Georgia, he knows everything about Georgia. He said every time he goes to Georgia, he sees something different. Don't discount the family connection we've written about before with his brothers being coached by Kirby Smart when he was a young Cub coach at Valdosta State. That definitely matters. I think the relationship there with Jake Fromm definitely matters. Brandon, I want you to kind of think of recruiting for a while, maybe this summer, because everybody's going to drift a little bit. But think of these recruits like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And what I mean by that is imagine a big, you know, huge, hulking two-story Trey Hill prospect that's lurking over Manhattan. And then you got to look at the handlers. You got to look at the anchors. You got to look at the things that would tie him to a certain school. And you would think of Jake Fromm with Trey Hill. You would think of the family relationship with Kirby Smart with Trey Hill. You would think of the home state there with Trey Hill. And you would also, and those are the type of things where it seems to me like Georgia's got more guys, more things connecting them to Trey Hill than the competition does.
Yeah, that's certainly an interesting way to describe that, and that's certainly a nice peace of mind probably for a lot of Georgia fans who are kind of wondering what the future holds for him. All right, to finish up with this, you made mention of the fact that you are in Athens. It's a Kirby Smart camp this weekend, and for those people who know there is no more Dog Night and know that a lot of camps like this are the replacement for that, would you mind just giving us a few more details about exactly what that means, exactly what's going to go on this weekend, and how it impacts Georgia recruiting potentially?
Yeah, great question there, Brandon. I think I was remarking with another one of our a writer on the recruiting beat yesterday. We were kind of thinking and scratching our heads about how much Georgia football and how much these camps have kind of changed since Ben Cleveland and Jacob Eason decided in the press box that to go ahead and commit to Georgia before their junior years. You know, you're talking about three full football seasons have passed since then, and we're on the summer the eve of another one. And I think what's going to happen is the Alabama model is being followed here. You know, other camps do it differently. I mean, LSU camp, man, they'll basically let you, you know, show up and measure the shoe size of all these recruits there. They'll let you talk to them. I think that one guy's told me before that they might even let you time them in the 40s. Auburn's the same way. Auburn is a very open campus in terms when they host their camps. It's probably because they have to be in the state of Alabama. Alabama's totally different. There's no media access allowed at any of their camps. And Georgia has kind of evolved from this, as I mentioned earlier. We only had 30 minutes to kind of take some pictures of guys and try to do a quick head count of who was there out of about 250 kids in helmets with their names stickered on the back of their helmets. So it makes it a pretty daunting task, but here's a fearless forecast, Brandon. If Georgia wins a bunch of games, if Georgia wins 10, 11 games, Georgia wins an SEC East title, the more successful Georgia is, the more games they win, the more higher they rate on the food chain of college football. I can see the access being splintered and being shuttered down, probably like it is at Alabama, because I think that's just the comfort level there of how Kirby did it and how he saw the model progress at Alabama. And I'd imagine a lot of our viewers would sit there and go, okay, no dog nights, no pictures of campers running around in their shorts, tumbling and going through bag drills and pad drills. They'd be fine with that as long as Georgia was starting to have some sort of level of 11-win success on the average per year. But it's just and this is why it kind of happened this way. Dog night kept growing and growing, 600, 800 campers, and it's impossible to hold a really good camp like that. The guys Georgia wants to see will get the majority of the reps, and all the other campers there that are kind of paying the freight for the whole camp that pay their $150 or whatnot, they're not getting the reps. They're getting very few reps. They're not getting seen, and they're not getting evaluated. So what Georgia tries to do is something I bark on a lot, basically 52 weeks a year, is the Bulldogs want to recruit 52 weeks a year. They want to bring guys in for, like, more clustered, more smaller, more intimate settings. That way they can get to know the prospect and their families. That way they can get a really good look at that prospect as well. You know, one funny takeaway you see from this camp is the amount of support staff Georgia has and the amount of Sony handicams they have. I'm not kidding you, Brandon. I tell you, if I'd venture to say there were 35 handicams that were being operated by, you know, folks in Georgia T-shirts or Georgia polo shirts just trying to view everything, it's almost like every station has about four or five cameras on it. So that way those coaches who can't see everything can go back and look at it and see which players really stood out to them and see which players really competed at a high level to them.
That's really interesting. Well, it certainly seems like a step forward for UGA recruiting, and obviously it's great to have a Dog Nation presence there. Jeff, we appreciate your coverage of everything that goes down there in Athens this week, and, of course, everything else around UGA recruiting this summer as well. We know it's going to be a busy summer on the UGA recruiting beat. We look forward to reading it all from you there at DogNation.com. And we're excited about talking to you again here on Dog Nation Daily again very soon as well.
Take it easy, Brandon. Hope everybody has themselves a good weekend.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff from Jeff Sintel. Check him out at DogNation.com in Athens this weekend covering the Kirby Smart Camp. He'll be writing about all of the stuff that happens there in his Sintel intel at DogNation.com. And, of course, dropping some stuff in the forum as well at forum.DogNation.com. And, by the way, we have a special surprise of our own coming to the forum here pretty soon. We'll be announcing that in the days ahead, so make sure you check that out coming up pretty soon. Forum.DogNation.com, a very special Dog Nation Daily announcement about the forum here very soon. Stay tuned for that. Time now, though, for our SEC Through. Hope you'll check us out on SEC Country Live Monday through Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the SEC Country Facebook page. Love doing that show with Mike Johnson, who was on yesterday's episode of Dog Nation Daily. The big news in the SEC today, and I'm recording this in the 10 o'clock hour, by the time many of you hear the show in podcast form or maybe even on the radio on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref later on today, you'll already know this news. But the SEC is expected to make its announcement about the graduate transfer rule, the rule change that could allow Malik Zaire to show up at Florida. I've always felt like this was just pro forma. Is that the right phrase? I never use those Latin phrases correctly, but I think it's pro forma that is the phrase I'm looking to use. I think the rule change is going to happen. I just think it's a no-brainer. I think Zaire probably wants to be at Florida, certainly in comparison to the Texas situation, if that's the runner-up here. Texas has more depth at the quarterback position than Florida does. A lot easier for Zaire, I imagine, to see himself as the Florida starter. I think this is all kind of coming together here. I always felt like that if Zaire wanted to be at Florida, the SEC would give Florida what it needed, which was a change to this rule that's only an SEC rule, not an NCAA rule. And now that all seems to be falling in place, it seems like Zaire does favor the Gators, and the Gators are going to get what they need from the SEC to get him on campus. Could be wrong, been wrong before, but it seems like that's the direction this thing is going. I thought that USA Today had an interesting piece about Butch Jones. Now, I talked yesterday about what Paul Meyerberg had written about Jones in his sort of, you know, 10 coaches on the hot seat column. But Dan Wolkin, who is a true columnist, had a piece about Jones in USA Today. I read it this morning. I think it got posted late yesterday afternoon, something along those lines. And basically what Wolkin brings up is something that we said on SEC Country Live yesterday, that Butch Jones, the thing that hurts him with his own fans more than anything else is these phrases, you know, champion of life, five-star heart, the idea that he's been consistently contending for championships. That's the most recent somewhat silly comment from Jones. That kind of stuff hurts him with his own fans. And I think that's true. And we've said this here, that while Georgia fans may mock Jones for some of the somewhat dumb things that he says, what a Georgia fan thinks about Butch Jones actually isn't all that consequential. It's what Tennessee fans think that's the biggest problem. I think the fact that, you know, Butch Jones sort of speaks in so many empty platitudes makes it difficult to ever truly rally that fan base around him. It's a hungry bunch up there. They, you know, it's been a long time since Tennessee's had any real winning to celebrate. And, you know, if Jones was a little more honest about that, acknowledge his own inability to get Tennessee as a program where it thinks it should be, then I think it'd actually be a little bit more popular. I think the bottom line of this entire discussion is that if Butch Jones does end up fired at the end of the season, it's his own words that may actually end up pushing him out the door here. So I think that's a very interesting thing to watch. And what I think it speaks to is just the unique personality profile that it takes to be an SEC coach. I thought that Wolkin in this piece had a great line. I'm going to butcher it here because I'm going to try to paraphrase it. But he said something to the effect of that in the SEC, losing means explaining no matter how much winning you've done. That's a very succinct way, I think, to describe what it's like in the SEC. There is no such thing as losing without having to offer up a reason for why it happened. And Butch Jones's reasons never quite seem adequate. And by the way, there's a carryover there for Kirby Smart as well, who also had dealt with his own share of disappointment in year one. I think one of the things that Kirby Smart did do pretty well is own some of that. You know, you heard him this week in Destin, Florida say, yeah, this was a disappointing first season, not meeting my standards, something along those lines. That's kind of the right way to talk. Now, talk has to be followed by actions, and we'll see if Kirby Smart can do that in this upcoming season. Another story I want to get to, and, you know, typically I wouldn't even mention something like this on this show. This is not a big piece of news, but Savon Smith is leaving LSU. He's only a backup defensive back. I think he could have been maybe in some contention to maybe be a nickelback starter there, something along those lines. The reason why I bring that up is LSU has the fewest returning starters of any program in the SEC. They are right there near the bottom. They really can't afford to lose another player. Smith has decided to transfer from the program. That's one of the reasons why I don't think LSU is going to be very good this season. I just don't think they have enough returning experience, and I think that'll be something to watch in Ed Orgeron's first year. By the way, speaking of Baton Rouge, you should check out a really interesting piece in the Baton Rouge Advocate from Ross Dellinger, looking at the state of SEC baseball, looking at the money that SEC baseball teams bring in and the money they spend. And you're probably not surprised to find out Georgia is at the bottom of that list, and we'll make that your SEC through. So to wrap things up here today, not just for the show, but for the weekend, I wanted to reflect on something that I saw on video this week. Jacob Eason's out there in California to part of one of these quarterback camps, working with one of these quarterback gurus. The truth is, I'm not even really sure what camp it is or who the quarterback coach that he's working with is. Some of y'all know more, way more about that than I do. But there is a video that ESPN has of him chucking like this 68-yard pass. And, you know, for all the criticism that Eason has taken here over the last few months, what the websites are saying, the national magazines are saying, and a lot of that is well-founded. You know, Eason's leadership skills probably do need to grow, and his understanding of the offense probably does need to be enhanced. And some of the intangible things that make quarterbacks good, Eason's probably got to nail those things down a little bit. But when you see him rear back and sling it 68 yards, you remember, oh, yeah, that's why he was a five-star quarterback in the first place, and that's why he's Georgia's incumbent starter. And we'll see if he can put it all together on the field this season. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.